Welcome to Discover the Languages of Love Summit. I'm your host, Paula Smith, and my guest today is Darlene Lancer. Darlene is a licensed marriage and family therapist and author of Codependency for Dummies, How to Speak Your Mind, Become Assertive and Set Limits, and 10 Steps to Self-Esteem, The Ultimate Guide to Stop Self-Criticism. She maintains a private practice specializing in relationships and codependency. Ms. Lancer has counseled individuals and couples for 25 years and coaches internationally. She blogs on several internet mental health websites, including her own, whatiscodependency.com and darlenelancer.com. This is our recent conversation.
Darlene, welcome to the summit.
Thank you so much, Paula, for inviting me. It's really a privilege to be on this panel with all of your other guests.
Yes, thank you. So, Darlene, I invited you today because you bring a wealth of knowledge and experience in working with couples and individuals who are experiencing conflict in their lives and relationships. We, over the past few days, have been looking at conflict and looking at it as a wake-up call in relationships, as an opportunity to grow and heal and not necessarily a signal to give up. And so the dimension that you bring, the dimension of codependency, I would really love for you to add light to that process. I'll just start with my first question to you, because I know people have been waiting to hear your point of view. So how does codependency and low self-esteem contribute to problems in a relationship?
Well, it does, and it's almost as if problems are built in from the get-go when you're codependent. But I want to just preface this by saying that codependency exists on a continuum. So some people have trouble being in relationships altogether, and other people are in relationships that are pretty good and even maybe don't have very much conflict, but they're still, their codependency comes out in passive ways. So, or they may just be codependent with their children, or just with their parents. So it's on a continuum. And the things that I'm going to talk about, some of it may not apply to you, but some of it will, because some people are more angry and other people hold back their anger. So just think, as I'm speaking, that I'm trying to address everyone. So that one of the first traits of all addiction, including codependency, is denial. And often codependents may be in denial that they're involved with an addict, first of all. And then many of them are in denial of their true feelings. I can even remember myself that sometimes after an interaction, I might not get angry for like 2 weeks thinking about what was said to me. And then I feel, you know, disrespected and angry at the person. I wasn't really in touch with my anger or a lot of other feelings. So part of the definition of codependency is that they're so focused on their partner, and they don't communicate their own feelings. Instead, they may blame the other person. And they may complain that they don't feel understood, but then they don't express themselves. It's hard for them to be vulnerable, because to be vulnerable, which brings couples together, you have to be able to, you know, be in touch with your fears and your hurt and your needs. And so they're also in denial of their needs. That's one of the main problems. They look to somebody else to meet their needs and someone else to make them happy. And even if they do know their needs, often they're ashamed to ask for them. Mm-hmm. I can recall many years ago I was dating a man, and after several months, he stopped taking me out to dinner and wanted to order in. And it was like, took me so much courage to ask him, you know, to tell him that I was feeling taken for granted, that this upset me, or to ask to do what I wanted to do. I was so used to going along with what he wanted. So, and then this was building up resentment. And so they often expect other people, their partner, to read their mind. Mm-hmm. So they don't have, they don't take responsibility for their feelings and needs. So that's how, how denial comes in. And then the core symptom of addiction, and including codependency, is shame. So underneath, and usually this is unconscious, codependents may not feel that they're lovable. The core feeling of shame is feeling inferior or inadequate. So this may cause them to bond with someone who isn't loving or who's unavailable. And that reinforces their core belief. They're always feeling rejected or that they're not getting enough love. But they're choosing somebody, maybe a narcissist or someone who can't commit or can't be intimate, and then they're unhappy. And because of their shame, they may even feel criticized or rejected when it's not the case. Mm-hmm. So, but they can't leave the relationship, so they just are unhappy and they blame their partner. But most of this is unconscious, so, you know, I'm just sort of trying to open up people's awareness, and then they can start to really address their core issues. So they'll, because of their feeling of inadequacy, they feel like they're not enough, and so they, but they want to be loved and accepted, and so they hide who they are. So it's hard for them to be honest, especially when they, the relationship is important to them. They're afraid of rejection. They're always afraid of rupturing the relationship. So they don't bring up any negative feelings, and often they will please to avoid conflict. They'll say yes when they really don't do, they don't want to do something. And then this leads to kind of manipulation and passive-aggressive behavior, and it's just infuriating to their partner. Mm-hmm. So they might agree to something and then be late or forget and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I mentioned in my own example, they may be in denial or afraid to express their anger, but it comes out indirectly with sarcasm or a look or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when things don't get discussed in the relationship, as you know, you can't just shove it under the rug. Eventually, it's going to fester and there'll be a bigger blow-up because you're sort of stockpiling these hurts and resentments, and then you have a whole laundry list of things that you're upset about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Darlene, I resonate with that even in my own process of healing. You know, I was smothering in shame, you know, 20, 25 years ago, and so feeling like I wasn't enough and couldn't express my feelings. And they would eventually come out in some of those ways in which you spoke about, you know, through passive aggressiveness, through, I was explosive, and in denial about what was around me. So it makes a lot of sense what you're saying.
Well, in connection with that, you mm-hmm. know, shame leads to, shame is a feeling, and low self-esteem is more a cognitive evaluation of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they go to hand in hand. So, given your example with yourself, it explains the symptom that's common among codependents is dysfunctional communication.
Mm-hmm.
They can't express their feelings, or they don't know how to be assertive. Now, assertiveness is learned, so usually they come from families where there's either passive-aggressiveness or anger or no discussion of feelings or blame or criticism. So they haven't learned how to make I statements mm-hmm. and take responsibility for the feelings. So learning to be assertive is key to avoiding conflict and having, you know, healthy relationships. It's one of the reasons I wrote this ebook about how to be assertive. Mm-hmm. So instead, I mean, I see couples and they start talking about their partner, mm-hmm. or they'll analyze their partner or label their partner or judge their partner, And, it, of course, it makes their partner angry, rather than using I statements. So, for instance, instead of saying, and when I explain to them, you know, to say how, use an I statement, say how they feel, well, the natural inclination is to say, well, I feel he's, or I feel you're being inconsiderate. Well, but again, that's a judgment. It's not really their feeling, as opposed to saying, I'm feeling ignored or I'm feeling unimportant. And it takes them a long time to kind of, I have to help them to sort of get to those deeper feelings that are more repressed. And the low self-esteem makes them hypersensitive to criticism. So often, even when there isn't any, somebody may be just saying how they feel, and they're taking it as a criticism. And they might even project their negative beliefs about themselves onto their partner in two ways. Either they think the partner has that problem, or they think their partner thinks that about themselves.
Right.
So I've sat in the room with a couple where, you know, for instance, a husband is saying something positive about his wife, and she doesn't hear it. And I ask him to repeat it, and she still doesn't hear it. And it's just, like, amazing to me to see how the mind can block out something that doesn't resonate with your feelings about yourself. Maybe hard to take a compliment, for instance. So there's a lot of defensiveness. It's hard to get a, have a conversation, and a constructive one. Things don't get resolved.
So what are some tips that couples that couples can use in this, in these cases?
Well, for one thing, with, when there's a you have to have a conversation about something that's, you know, might be controversial or there's conflict. There's a few practical things you can do. And first of all, it's recommended not to settle differences in your bedroom, to keep that a safe, sacred place. And ideally, not to get into anything too heavy late at night when you're tired. And in ahead of time, agree with your partner to have time limited to discussions and stick to that preset time. Like, you'll just talk about it for 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So then you, when you break, you have time. Pardon me?
No, I'm here.
Okay. Time to think about what you're hearing and how you feel and not react, because the biggest problem with codependents is they're highly reactive because of this taking things personally and being defensive and feeling responsible for their partner's feelings. So it lets you chill for a little bit and try to think about solutions. And you can also use the breaks to soothe yourself. So if your partner is saying something that you're feeling hurt, to give yourself some love, you know, to counterbalance that. And the next tip, I have about 10 tips here, is to listen with curiosity, with a sincere desire to understand your partner and see the world through his or her eyes. That's the logo on my website, because I think that empathy is so important for to get past anything. So if you don't understand what your partner's saying, ask for clarification. Try to put what you want to say on hold. And remember that they're speaking from their experience. It's whatever they're saying is really about them. It's not a truth. Even if they're speaking about you, it's not the truth about you. You can always disagree. But try to listen to where the person's coming from. And then, as I mentioned already, use I statements to express your needs and your feelings. This is a simple statement, but it takes a lot of work to get to that point, to be conscious of them, to practice being assertive, and then taking responsibility for your needs and behavior and your feelings, not always expecting your partner to read your mind or to meet all your needs that most of them are up to you to fulfill. And basically to try to maintain goodwill towards your partner. Separate the behavior from the person that you care about. You might not like what he or she's doing, but you still love the person. And try to think, as you are, that they're doing their best. That even when something feels really hurtful, that in most cases their intentions are not to be mean, even though it might feel that way. So I was just thinking of that example I gave you about speaking up about going to wanting to go to restaurants with this man I was dating.
Right.
When I finally broached the subject, he said, oh, well, the reason he wanted to eat at home was because it was more intimate. So it was really because he wanted to be closer to me. It was just the opposite of what I imagined, that he was just not respecting me and not caring about me. So,
and don't some of us do that, darling? It's almost like we make up this story about what others are thinking without actually checking it out.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ways to get past resentment, is to really check it out and not make assumptions about the other person. A lot of times the things that we think about in our mind are based on things from our past or our childhood. And you might find when you're with a person, it's fine. And then when you're away from them, you're either idealizing them. It's either one or the other. You're idealizing them or you're devaluing them. And it has nothing to do with reality. It has more to do with your childhood and your past, not staying in the present. So to become more vulnerable in your, rather than just blaming and fighting, is to communicate your fears, your needs, your guilt, and ask for what you need. And I think people always forget this, to tell your partner the benefits, the reward for meeting your needs. Like, it'll make me feel closer to you. It'll make me want to go to ball games with you or whatever it might be. Let them know that there's a reward for if they would listen to you or if they would be more considerate of whatever need it is, then you'll, you know, let them know that how it's going to affect your feelings towards them and the relationship. And I didn't mention this earlier, but one of the contributions to conflict is not setting boundaries.
Yes.
In order to love, every relationship has to have boundaries. We all have our limits, so you need to really know what your bottom line is. And what's not negotiable. And then don't compromise on it, because in the end, you'll resent it, and it's going to undermine the relationship. And then finally, to practice assertiveness, because that's really the key to resolving conflict. Because people think being assertive is sometimes mean, but it's really not. If you're just talking about this yourself, you can say, I'm angry. You could say, I don't like that. You could say a lot of things that don't put the other person on the defensive when you're honest and just talking about yourself. And the other person can really listen, because you're taking responsibility for your feelings.
And you're showing in some way, you know, that you're valuable to yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the first step, raising your self-esteem and honoring your feelings. And you know, codependence because of the shame of so much self-criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And so boosting your self-esteem is number one. And our inner critic is the biggest obstacle to self-esteem, which is why I wrote 10 Steps to Self-Esteem, the Ultimate Guide to Stopping Self-Criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Because that it kind of begins with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you will expect and be able to ask for, you know, healthy behavior from your partner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you alluded to this a little bit earlier. Well, maybe you can explain in a little bit more detail. How does codependency contribute to resentment? Because resentment is a relationship.
Right. Well, probably all those things I said mentioned before, but I guess to be specific, people-pleasing or not setting boundaries, putting up with unacceptable behavior is going to lead to resentment, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I mentioned, denial.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're pursuing someone who's unavailable, if you're in a relationship with an addict or abuser,
mm-hmm.
Or just any behavior that you're overlooking, you're going to keep feeling resentful rather than, again, setting limits. But a lot of times people minimize or rationalize bad behavior, and that's a symptom of denial. Or they keep trying to change themselves. It's very common to people that are abused to placate the abuser, and that never works. It invites more abuse. What you need to do is set boundaries, and that takes some work on your self-esteem and assertiveness to do that. But getting back to what I said about feeling unlovable, so a lot of times codependents, because of this underlying belief about themselves and shame, when they meet somebody they're attracted to, they often idealize them,
mm-hmm.
and they hope that this love will make them happy and will make them feel, will validate them, will kind of overcome their shame. And then as they get to know the person, they're disappointed with the reality of who the other person is. And rather than accept their partner for who he or she is, they try to remake them into their idealized image. So they want to change them, control them, judge them, give them advice, caretaking, all these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's very annoying to the partner. It creates a relationship that's out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
But it leads to resentment by both parties. And the person that's doing this is going to be angry that their person isn't who they imagine, that they aren't changing, and that they're not taking their advice.
Mm-hmm.
So letting go of to fix other people and caretaking is, you know, the antidote to that. And trying to change somebody else, which is impossible, will always lead to resentment.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I guess also what you mentioned is like not telling people the truth when they've hurt you or said something you didn't like. Instead of addressing it because they want to avoid conflict and avoid rupturing the relationship, they just build resentments. They complain to their friends. That maybe fuels the resentment more. And sometimes when there's a conversation, you find that was just a misunderstanding, and it went away.
So you did mention earlier about that vulnerability brings a couple together. In my practice, you know, I often talk with couples about vulnerability, and I often ask them to define it. And it's so interesting, all of the different definitions that I get. How do you define vulnerability, Darlene?
Well, I think it means being authentic,
mm-hmm.
transparent. So I think there are levels of that. So it's kind of like you don't know what you don't know. So if some feelings are unconscious, Mm-hmm. And until you can really access those deeper feelings, it's hard to be, you know, express your hurt or things like that. Often it takes a therapist the skills to get you to access those deeper feelings, that you're feeling rejected, you're feeling unimportant, not loved, that you're feeling ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
People are ashamed of their shame, so they don't want to go there. And for many, particularly men, they think that it's weak to feel ashamed. So they do. There's a lot of defenses around protecting not to go to that place. And it's a struggle to get to intimacy. I wrote a blog on my website. Let's see, your intimacy index, like how to get more intimacy, and I list on there like the steps and what real intimacy is and how to get there. And part of that is really being honest and talking about these deeper feelings that you have. There has to be a safe, the relationship has to be safe before you can really do that. So with high conflict couples, it gets, if there's a lot of hurt and anger over a number of years, it gets harder to like claw back all their defenses to get to that place. So I always encourage couples, if they're having a problem, to seek counseling sooner. Don't wait until like you're ready to throw in the sponge, because then, you know, there's a lot of, sometimes, you know, trust is very fragile. And sometimes it's difficult to rebuild trust. It takes a lot of time and effort.
Right, and I like that you said that, because not waiting until the last, you know, sort of moment, because it also takes a lot of energy to put into a relationship where the trust has been broken and where there's a lot of hurt. So you need energy, you know, to be able to stay with the process and work toward the healing process.
Right, it takes a certain amount of commitment.
And commitment, yes.
You have to want that relationship.
Right.
So if you already have one foot out the door, you know, it's, you, like you said, you don't want to put that energy into it anymore.
Right.
Because there's so many bad feelings already.
So you may have alluded to this, but maybe we can go a little bit deeper. And you talk about the struggle for intimacy. What does that mean?
Well, as you can see, there's a lot of obstacles to feeling close with someone. It's inevitable that there's going to be conflict, that your feelings are going to get hurt, that there's going to be misunderstandings and disappointments. That's just part of the human condition. And there may even be times when you hate each other. One writer talks about hate in the married state. So intimacy requires honesty, openness, trust, and of course vulnerability. It also requires you to be assertive. And sometimes risking the relationship to break through the ego's fears and defenses. So it requires some self-esteem. So you're not so afraid of, you know, risking rejection or even being alone, being abandoned. So it's really a struggle to build up that strength of the self, the self-esteem, and then to walk through that door of fear, to be able to reveal yourself, not knowing how the other person's going to react. And, you know, a lot of people think they're looking for a merger with the person. They first fall in love, they think, oh, we're like one, and we're just so much the same, and like all the same things. They just want to merge with the person. But actually, that's a big obstacle to intimacy, because intimacy is about closeness. It's not about being one. you really have to have more autonomy and be able to acknowledge that the other person is separate from you. And then start to accept the other person for who they are. And that's what love is really about, not how you wish them to be. So there's some tools that I can recommend for letting go of some of these expectations and resentments. If we have time, I can share them.
Sure.
Oh, okay. So one of the things is to take responsibility for yourself and, you know, do some self-examination. If you're resentful, if you've had an argument, what's your role? Were you blaming? Were you judging? Were you totally honest? Did you ask for what you want? And what are your needs? Are you responsible for meeting some of those needs? And then you can dialogue. This is really helpful. Dialogue with your partner in your imagination. Dialogue on paper. And with one hand, write from your state of mind, and then with your non-dominant hand, have your partner answer, you doing the writing. And keep going back and forth, you dialoguing, until you'll see some resolution. And you'd be surprised how much you can get into understanding your partner's point of view this way, because you unconsciously you usually know something about them. And then, as I said, realize that you're two separate people. So, and this exercise can help you see things from his or her point of view, from their standpoint. It builds empathy. Sometimes I found that resentment covers up guilt. And sometimes people feel guilty about something, and rather than, again, taking responsibility for their behavior, they just pile up more and more resentment, make the other person wrong. So if you're honest with yourself and you think you owe the person an amends, you know, take responsibility for it and make amends. And then after you've done this examination, if you're still feeling upset, as you mentioned, talk to the person about your hurt feelings. And then you'd be surprised how resentment goes away when you're doing the things that make you happy and you're giving yourself more love. You're less focused on the other person and the problem, and you're enjoying your life. And I remember one time I was upset at someone I was dating, and he didn't ask me out for Friday night or something or other. Well, I went dancing instead. I had such a good time, and it just, like, flew out of my mind. I wasn't resentful at all. So do what makes you happy, and take your eyes off of the other person. And finally, prayer is always helpful. So see the other person in the light. You know, whether or not you believe in God, just visualize the person having all the good things you want for yourself. Imagine that you're sending, you know, those, you know, loving thoughts, loving qualities to your to the other person. And in doing that, it's actually a Buddhist exercise. It opens up your own heart as you're feeling all these positive feelings. So it makes you more loving.
Makes sense. Beautiful. So, Darlene, for our listeners out there, you've really enlightened us. And I'm feeling like I can already use some of the practical tools that you have given us. How might our listeners be able to follow you, follow your work? I know you're writing a new book for Hazelton.
Yes, I'm writing a book on shame, which I think is the destroyer of relationships. So it's so important, particularly when it comes to addiction and codependency. And people can follow me on Facebook. You can look up my name, Darlene Lancer, or my page, Codependency Recovery. And I have two websites, DarleneLancer.com and WhatIsCodependency.com. And there's links to my books and ebooks there, and a free PDF on 14 tips for letting go. So I'm happy to share those with you if you just send me an email at info@darlenelanster.com or go to my website. I also have some YouTubes up on YouTube if you put my name in. So there's lots of information there available. Oh, and I have lots of blogs. Blog every month. You can subscribe to my blog by clicking the bookmark tab on your browser. And I have one from March on the power of personal boundaries, and I explain all about boundaries and how to set them. Mm-hmm. And there's some on to trust or not to trust. There's a blog on rebuilding trust. There's one on dance with intimacy, how to get the intimacy index. There's some on abuse, and there's a lot of good information there if you look at my articles and blogs.
Great. Thank you. So you've really tied it together. You know, behind or underneath conflict is an opportunity to explore boundaries, vulnerability, self-acceptance, and assertiveness. So you've really solidified and crystallized the notion that under conflict is an opportunity for growth. Thank you so much, Darlene, for being on the summit.
Oh, thank you, Paula. It's really been a pleasure. I'm very gratified to be able to share my experience and knowledge with your listeners.